Now turn to page 7 of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and begin reading along with the cassette.
Three men begin a trip under the sea that no one would have believed possible. But Nemo, captain of the giant submarine, the Nautilus, takes them around the world, 20,000 leagues under the sea.
I am Pierre Aronnax, professor of the Museum of Paris. I have studied the animals of the sea all my life. In the year 1866, a strange thing happened. Ships at sea had met a large, unknown thing, shaped like a huge bullet. Sometimes it glowed with a light. It was much larger and faster than a whale. On July 20th, the steamship Governor Higginson, sailing 5 miles from Australia's east coast, saw what looked like a small island that behaved strangely.
Whale ahoy! See the water shooting in the air, sir!
But who ever saw a whale that big?
As the months passed, other ships reported seeing other strange things that couldn't be explained.
We're doing 18 knots, but that giant whale is still passing us.
Where are we exactly? We must report that we've hit something.
Pump the water from the ship. We've been hit and have a hole nearly 6 feet across the middle.
And when these different sea accidents were marked on a map...
If that same giant creature was seen each time, it went around the world at the unbelievable speed of 25 knots.
The United States was first to send a ship to look into the mystery. The following letter arrived 3 hours before the ship was to leave. It caught me in New York. To Monsieur Aronnax, professor in the Museum of Paris, Fifth Avenue Hotel, New York. Sir, if you will consent to join the Abraham Lincoln in this expedition, the government of the United States will, with pleasure, see France represented in this enterprise. Very cordially yours, J.B. Hobson, Secretary of Marine. Without waiting a moment, I told my servant, Conseil, to pack. No time to lose. Lock in my trunk all my traveling clothes.
As you wish, sir.
When we reported to the ship less than 3 hours later...
Mr. Aronnax, come aboard. As you can see, this is the finest and fastest ship in the United States Navy.
The captain wasted no time in putting out to sea. Thousands of the good people of New York cheered and waved good luck. This ship had everything it needed to find the strange sea creature. Every day, the crew looked over the waters, hoping to be the first to see the monster and win the $2,000 that Captain Farragut had promised to the man who saw the monster first. The best eye probably belonged to Ned Land, a Canadian who was the best man with a harpoon in the world. For 3 months, nothing happened.
Captain, sir, the men are very unhappy. It's beginning to worry me.
I don't blame them. If we don't see the whale in 3 more days, we'll head for Europe.
Just before we were going to leave the area and head for other seas, we heard a shout.
Look out there! The very thing we are looking for is just behind us. Pull up the rudder and reverse the engines.
In the darkness, the monster lifted out of the water and gave off a strong but strange light.
Mr. Aronnax, I don't know what horrible thing is out there. I won't risk my ship in the dark. We will wait for daylight and the scene will change.
No one went to bed that night. The next day began with fog, but it soon began to clear. This first good view made me think the thing's length was 250 feet. I figured out it breathed air like a whale.
Turn on more steam!
We turned on full steam, sir.
Unable to catch the beast, we fired the ship's gun, which used special bullets shaped like cones.
I will follow that beast till my ship breaks up.
The chase seemed to be hopeless, but it continued until that night. After disappearing for a while, the whale was seen not moving, as if it were asleep.
We're within 20 feet. I can't miss with my harpoon.
When the harpoon struck, the animal's light went out suddenly, and 2 large jets of water flowed over the bridge of the ship, knocking over men and breaking the ropes of the harpoon. A terrible crash followed, and I was thrown over the rail and into the sea.
Help! Help!
I caught sight of something disappearing in the east. It was the ship. I was lost.
If my master would be so good as to lean on my shoulder, master would find it easier to swim.
I grabbed my servant Conseil's arm with one hand. The crash threw you into the sea?
No, but since I am your servant, I jumped in to help you. As I went into the sea, I heard men say, the propeller and rudder are broken.
We were in trouble. We decided that our only chance for being saved was by being picked up by one of the ship's boats, which would probably not come before morning when they would have light to see. Some hours later, the moon appeared through the thick clouds. This little light gave us new courage. I looked in all directions.
Look to the east. The ship.
She must be 5 miles away and no boats. Help! Help! We stopped moving around in the water to listen. It seemed as if someone answered. Did you hear?
Yes, yes.
Conseil raised himself half out of the water by leaning on my shoulder. What had he seen? The thought of the monster whale came into my head. The time is past for Jonas to live in whales' bellies. And yet, Conseil was pulling me again. Ned!
Yes, sir.
Were you thrown into the sea by the same crash?
Yes, sir. But I was luckier than you. I grabbed hold upon this floating island. A monster whale with a skin of steel.
Morning came, and I was about to look at the sub carefully when I felt it sinking.
Oh, darn it! Open, you unfriendly devils!
Luckily, the submarine stopped sinking. We were quickly taken in a dark room.
Here are people who are not very friendly.
Don't get excited, Ned, or you may get us all into useless trouble. After some time, lights went on in the room, the door opened, and 2 men came in.
If Master were to tell our story, these men may understand some of the words.
By turns, we each told a part of our story in different languages, after which the 2 strangers spoke to one another and left.
We speak to those devils in French, English, German, and Latin, and not one has the kindness to answer.
Calm yourself. Anger will do no good. Then a servant came in with dry clothes and food.
There is the problem of not knowing all languages, or the problem of not having one language that everyone speaks.
Bah! What do you suppose they eat here? Turtle liver, shark steaks, and beef steaks from sea dogs?
The dishes are fine china, and the silverware is expensive. They all have a saying in Latin. Changing with change, plus the letter N. Could that be the captain's initial? Our door was always locked when the servants left. And by the 3rd day, Ned was so angry that he jumped the waiter.
Be quiet, Master Land. And you, Professor, will you be so good as to listen to me?
At these words, Ned Land rose, and the waiter walked out without showing the anger this man must have felt toward Ned.
I speak your languages and could have answered you before, but I wish to know you first, then to think. The story told by each one was the same. It told me who each of you was. I wish to think carefully before acting. You are talking to a man who has left the outside world, and you now come to trouble my new way of life.
It was not our purpose to disturb you, sir.
Was it on purpose that the Abraham Lincoln chased me all over the seas? That its cannonballs bounced off my ship? And that Mr. Ned Land struck my ship with his harpoon? I have the right to treat you as enemies.
It might be the right of a madman, but not that of a civilized man. This unusual man then made a statement that shocked us all.
Professor, I am not what you call a civilized man. I am finished with the world forever. I therefore do not obey its laws.
By the look on his face, I knew he had had an unhappy past. But At the next moment, he became strangely kind.
You may walk around my ship except for one condition. Unknown events may force me to lock you in your cabin for hours or days. Do you accept this condition?
One question, sir. When will you let us go? The answer shook us all.
Never. You are my prisoners of war. You came to find out a secret about me which no man in the world must know. The secret of my whole life.
You should now be on page 18.
I've read your book, The Depths of the Sea. A sea you have really seen little of. But in my ship, you are going to visit a land of undersea wonders.
I confess, Nemo's words had a great effect on me. You have touched my weak point, sir, namely my great interest in marine life.
I will explain more as you join me in breakfast. The other two will be served here. Come, Mr. Aronnax.
Later, in a beautiful dining room of oak paneling with ivory decorations, we were served on plates of valuable china.
What are these foods? They have an interesting flavor. Excellent.
Most of these foods are unknown to you. They are all things from the sea. The sea gives me all my wants, Professor, by the use of nets for undersea hunting. My meats are dolphin's liver, fillet of turtle, and other underwater treats. My vegetables are sea cucumbers and sea lettuce. And lastly, let me offer you some jam of anemone, a most delicious fruit.
Captain Nemo spoke with great pleasure about the sea, which he loved.
The sea is everything to me. It covers 7/10 of the earth and is the source of life. It also offers the greatest peace. For 30 feet below its level, no king rules, and no horrors of war happen.
After breakfast, Captain Nemo took me among other spacious rooms, full of surprises.
These are the only ties which I have to Earth, Professor. 12,000 books.
12,000? Why, this library would do honor to any college. Another huge room was like a museum. Ah, but no museum in Europe owns such a collection. Magnificent.
I have a collection of paintings. Also the music of the world's greatest composers. Plus an organ I sometimes play.
Captain Nemo next led me to what would now be my new bedroom. This is a fine room. Thank you, Captain.
My bedroom is next to yours. Come and see it.
His room was very different from my own. It was like a cell.
The comforts of life do not interest me. But look, on the walls are all the controls for steering and running the Nautilus.
Thermometer for outside water temperature. Barometer for indicating water pressure. Manometer, which shows the ship's depth at any time. Also, compass and storm glass. And my ship, if you're interested, is run by electricity.
Electricity? But scientists can only produce it in small amounts of power.
I produce as much as I need. Electricity lights and warms and powers my entire ship. Electricity cooks all the food in our kitchen, and also works powerful pumps to take in and store fresh air when we rise to the surface.
But how do you produce all that electricity?
By a means unknown to your scientists. I take salt from seawater, then change it into sodium metal, which can be heated and made to produce great currents of electricity. The engine room. Giant electromagnets carry power through a series of teeth and levers to the ship's propeller. The Nautilus can reach a speed of 50 miles per hour.
Amazing. Later, in his control room, Captain Nemo showed me the plans of his unusual ship.
My ship is a long tube with pointed ends, very like a cigar in shape. Length, 232 feet, plus a 30-foot spear. Greatest width, 26 feet. As you see, there are three floors on which there are many rooms. My whole ship weighs 1,500 tons and displaces 50,000 feet of water. To sink, we open the valves and fill the lowest tanks. To rise, we pump out that water and float again.
You are justly proud of your wonderful boat, Captain Nemo.
Think of how it is better than your surface ships. No sails to take care of. No steam boilers to explode. No fire to fear. No coal to run short of. And no crashes to fear down below where my ship is the only one around.
The story of how he built the Nautilus in secret was just as amazing.
Each separate part was made in different parts of the world. The steel keel in France, the propeller in London, the body in Liverpool, the engine by Krupp in Prussia, the beak in Sweden, the controls in America, and so on. The workmen trained by myself on a desert island put the Nautilus together. When our job was done, we burned everything we used. The cost of it all, construction, $347,500. Fittings, $400,000. My collection of art and such, $1 million. Total, $1,747,500.
Fantastic. Then you are rich? Captain Nemo's answer surprised me.
Very rich, sir. And I could, without missing it, pay all the money that France owes the world. We are now in the Pacific, the largest ocean on Earth. The pumps are emptying the water tanks, making us rise. For greater strength, the outer body is covered by iron plates that just overlap each other, like the shells of some turtles. For the scales of a fish.
That explains why your craft was thought to be a large sea creature at first. When I told these wonders to my two friends, Ned Land and Conseil, while showing them the museum room...
But, Professor, didn't you find out how big his crew is? 10 men, 20, 50, 100?
If you are thinking of escaping, Ned, or grabbing control of the Nautilus, give up the idea. It is hopeless. Suddenly, the lights went out, and we were in the dark.
Is this the end?
No, but look. Two wall panels are sliding open. We can see right out at the sea around the ship. And at a depth of 150 feet, the wonderful view of the undersea world and its colorful wonders unfolded before our eyes.
Unbelievable. What a sight.
Wonderful. The rest of the world has never seen this marine wonderland and its undersea mysteries. Why, I see kinds of marine animals never known before. And look, an underwater mountain chain in the distance. We saw little of Captain Nemo for days. The crew continued to puzzle us with their unknown language.
Notran respok lorni versh.
Every day, this man looks at the horizon and says the same thing. Its meaning is unknown to me. Everything aboard the Nautilus was strange, including the letter that was brought to me one day. What an odd man. A written note from Nemo aboard his own ship.
16th November, 1867. Captain Nemo invites Professor Aronnax and his companions to a hunting party which will take place tomorrow morning in forests of the island of Crespo. Captain Nemo, commander of the Nautilus.
The next morning, before starting, are we going in regular diving gear? But the lifelines carrying air cut down on a diver's movements.
Not my diving suit, sir. My own improvements of that backpack, invented by two Frenchmen, will store enough air under pressure and will let us walk underwater for 9 or 10 hours. That lamp will light our way in the dark water. And this rifle is an air gun shooting out glass bullets which give off an electrical charge strong enough to knock out any sea creature without killing it.
Crewmen helped us into the unusual diving suits.
We are in a separate waterproof room that will open into the sea.
When all four of us were fully dressed in the diving suits, an outside door opened and seawater filled the room.
The lead weights on our boots let us walk on the sea's floor.
For a quarter of a mile, we wandered happily through what was bright undersea garden of colorful beauty. It made me sad to crush under my feet the beautiful sea animals which covered the ground by the thousands.
You should now be on page 28.
Nemo led us finally to an undersea forest of tall, straight seaweeds and tree plants that grew from the ocean floor to the surface, straight as rods of iron.
When you bend one of these plants, it immediately straightens itself again.
We came upon patches of marine plants, too, and for a moment, it seemed we were on land in an above-ground forest.
Those fish darting from branch to branch look like a swarm of hummingbirds in the air, but this is all under the sea.
When we came upon a large sea spider, an angry shellfish with terrible claws, Captain Nemo knocked it aside with his gun butt, but I wondered if there were not worse monsters ahead. But to our pleasant surprise, we next met a large sea otter. Its shining skin will fetch $400 American money in the fur market, but I think that Nemo shot it for his own use, not money. Only once did real danger threaten us as two dangerous sharks swam by. Fortunately, sharks have poor eyesight and fail to see us. If they had attacked, we would have had to fight for our lives. Finally, our strange underwater hunting trip was over, and we returned to the Nautilus. Nemo took us back slowly, so that we climbed the slope gradually from the depths to avoid getting the bends. On we sailed, passing the Sandwich Islands where Cook died in 1779. On December 1st, 1867, an important thing happened.
We just crossed the equator, heading into the South Pacific.
On December 11th, my friends and I watched a strange sight from the portholes.
Look, a sunken ship.
On December 25th, 1867, we spent a strange Christmas day underwater. Merry Christmas to you both.
What's merry about it? No snow down here, no Christmas tree aboard, no gifts given out. Some Christmas.
We had reached the New Hebrides Isles in the South Pacific, where several ships had gone under long ago in dangerous waters.
These are the ship's papers of Commander La Perouse, whose three ships all sank around here in 1785. I found the wrecks. The mystery of the disappearance of his ships was never solved before.
By January 4th, 1868, in the new year, the Nautilus reached Papua and entered the Torres Straits, leading to the Indian Ocean.
We will pass Gilboa Island and reach the Indian Ocean.
But these waters are very dangerous, Captain Nemo, with coral reefs all over. What if... And then it happened, a crash that shook the whole ship.
We're stuck in a coral reef, unable to move forward.
When we went on deck, it looked bad. We're stranded, Captain, 2 miles from Gilboa Island. How can the Nautilus ever get free? The tides are low here and will never float us free.
Wrong, Professor. In 5 days, at the full moon, the high tide will be a yard and a half higher, letting us escape. You will see.
My two friends had an idea. We cannot escape, for only wild men live on that island.
But why not take the small boat and hunt fresh meat there? We'll taste meat again for the first time in months.
We took a small boat and rowed toward the shore. Once on the island, we looked for animals to hunt.
There doesn't seem to be anything worth shooting around here.
But we did find fresh fruits to add to our diet of seafoods. Give that tree a good shake. Not finding any animals, however, we had to be happy gathering a boatload of plants and fruits. Breadfruits, cabbage, palms, yams, beans. A nice boatload.
But time to return to the ship. How time flies on firm ground.
Loaded with our riches, we left the shore and soon reached the Nautilus.
The ship is still stuck, so why not return to the island again tomorrow? Sooner or later, we'll find animals to shoot.
The next morning found us at the island, and before long...
Wood pigeons! We'll soon eat them.
Ned roasted them and also made a delicious breadfruit pie.
Excellent, Ned.
Yes, but pigeons are so little. I want some four-footed animals. I won't be happy until I've killed an animal with some real meat on it.
Ned Land's wish came true.
Kangaroo rabbits. 2, 4, 5, down.
Not to mention this wild pig you got before. Good shooting, Ned. As we ate our large meal...
Suppose we never return. We could row to some island and perhaps meet a ship.
Suddenly, Ned stopped talking.
Stone. They do not fall from the sky.
That stone was thrown.
Stop your recorder and turn the cassette over to complete the story.